Hello and welcome to the Opening Bell. I'm boxing news editor Tris Dixon, joined this week, as always, by Matt Christie. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm okay. I just fear that I'm not going to get a word in edgeways this week.
And part of the reason for that might be because we do have a special guest who's jumped into the office, Spencer Fearon. Spencer, how's things?
I'm really cool. You know what I mean? Always feel blessed to be at Boxing News. You know what I mean? Because you guys always write good things about me or any fighter associated with me.
It's been a while. You've been in the office. You used to come in quite a bit, didn't you?
Yeah, I know. It's all changed now. You know, you get really busy. We get really busy with the stuff that we're doing. You know, with the personal stuff. And now that we're down at Sky as well. You know what I mean? It's great, but we can plug two shows. Cause I've done the Sky show today, and then it's an honor to be, the corporation that is the Boxing News.
It's nice to have you here, Spencer. And let's get started with some stuff that happened last week. Gennady Golovkin was on a Sky show against Curtis Stevens. Some people thinking Golovkin ticked a lot of boxes, showed that he could take a shot, showed that he could be patient and wait for his opportunity to come. That wasn't necessarily your take, though, was it?
No, it wasn't my take at all. I think Golovkin was a little bit exposed. I think we saw fallibilities in his technique. Apart from the devastating left hook that he threw, I mean, which was a great thing because, like, when he threw
the second round left hook.
Yeah, the second round left hook, he hit Stevens, and Stevens was like, whoa, what the hell? You know what I mean? It was one of them it was like Scooby-Doo kind of retake kind of thing that hit that shot. You know what I mean? He's like, what's going on? But I wasn't that impressed, but it's only because I said this on numerous occasions that GGG should be renamed GBH because he's that vicious. And he likes to inflict injury on people. That's his style of fighting. But in watching that, and him talking about he could go down to 154 and fight Floyd Mayweather, on that performance there, brother, I think you should stay at middleweight because I think Floyd would tax you.
Matt, at middleweight, Golovkin, he talked about Sergio Martinez afterwards as Kid Chocolate, who's with another promotional company, another TV network, so that's unlikely, but Kid Chocolate, Martinez, and then the British bunch. Anyone out there to trouble Golovkin at middleweight?
I don't think there's anyone to trouble Golovkin at middleweight. I still think he's the best. He maybe hasn't done it on accomplishments yet, but I still think he's the best 160-pounder. I think Sergio Martinez has seen better days. I'd be interested to see what he looks like when and if he comes back. But with Golovkin, I mean, I wasn't particularly impressed with Golovkin's performance. I think perhaps we've built him up to such a level after the way he walked through Matthew Macklin. But I also think it was just a case of Golovkin wasn't quite as good as we expected, and Curtis Stevens was a little bit better.
Okay, interesting. So if you could make one fight for Golovkin in his next fight, who would you put him in with?
For the sake of boxing history, I'd put him in with Sergio Martinez so we can clear that up, and then we've got effectively like the linear middleweight champion.
Who would you go for, Spencer?
You know what? I would say Peter Quillin. Reason being, because Peter Quillin had a lacklustre performance last time out against Rosado and got a lot of stick. And I've been in the gyms quite a few times with Peter Quillin in New York. I think he's a very, very talented guy. And I think if he could stick to a game plan, he'd give Golovkin all the trouble in the world. Martinez, we have to be realistic now. Martinez is just looking for more retirement money. Yeah. Would Martinez want to say that he wants to take a chance against Golovkin? There has been fights now with Martinez where, you know, I don't think he beat Mighty Murray, to tell you the honest truth. And he's showing wears and tears of age. You know what I mean? Him 4 years ago, he was like on fire. Like now, you'd have to admit that, you know, he's long in the tooth now. And he's happy being home in Argentina, selling out, getting 70,000 people in the arena. He's getting paid. So he's thinking, I don't need to fight more tough now. I've earned my stripes. So I think you should leave him alone. But yeah, someone like Peter Quillin up for a challenge, even though they're on two different networks. And the sad thing is this, when he was being interviewed by Max Kellerman, when Golovkin was being interviewed, and I think it's really nice also that his English is kind of up to scratch and all. When he's being interviewed, he when he was there, it's like they don't want to mention any other fighter who's on Showtime. Do you know what I mean? Nah, and I don't like that. I think, are they briefed before? Like Max said, by the way, when they're doing that round table thing, by the way, don't mention nobody who's not fighting for HBO. I think, let's be real. You know what I mean? You want to fight the best, call out. Because I know everyone's saying, right, all roads lead to Floyd Mayweather. That's where you're going to make the most money. And you've said on numerous occasions that you could get down to 154. That's the fight. forget about going out to Andre Ward. I think Andre Ward will deal with you. I'm telling you that now. I think Andre Ward could evade those heavy shots and do what he does. A Carl Froch fight? Nope. So I would say I'd like to see him with Peter Quillin.
Okay. One that you mentioned, I think I'd like to see Golovkin Froch. I think that's a fight that I'd really like to see, providing obviously Carl comes through against George Groves.
Which I'm stating now that he will.
I think that's a massive fight for down the line, Froch and Golovkin. I think that's I think the styles, you talk about blended styles, I think there could be a wicked blend there. Elsewhere, last weekend in heavyweight action, Richard Towers came up unstuck against Lucas Brown. Spencer, was that a surprise to you?
Who was a French guy? You would know.
Gregory Tony.
Him. He exposed Richard Towers. Wouldn't you say he did expose Richard Towers? And don't get twisted. I like Richard Towers. I like the fact that he has been on the wrong side of the track and tried to rejuvenate his life now and get his life on a different path. So I respect him for that. I like the guy. I've met him on numerous occasions and he's a likable guy. Unfortunately, though, this is boxing. And I just felt sorry for him. I felt sorry for him, meaning like he should have had more learning fights before going into a fight like that, because you know what Lucas Brown's going to do.
Yeah.
And I actually like Lucas Brown. Lucas Brown just came across as such a gentleman after the fight. I was like, that was warming to me to see. You know what I mean? Because I thought, Australian guy, he's going to be a bit brash and stuff. Like, he was total opposite. You know what I mean? He's a very, very honest man. It's just sad to see Richard Towers just crumble like that. Yeah,
it must have been difficult for him as well, because when we were talking about that Gregory Tony fight, that was over 12 months ago, and that was Richard Towers' most recent outing prior to this, and then he's going from that, with that length of time out of the ring, into this fight against Lucas Brown, which on paper was his hardest test.
So out of the frying pan into the fire sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he did get great. Because remember, I think I saw you down there at the David Hay gymnasium. He was sparring loads of rounds with David Hay. He was doing a lot of work with Deontay Wilder,
But we've just been talking about that, haven't we? George Groves, sparring Kessler, Durrell, Froch. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Sparring at the end of the day.
You got big gloves and big head. And
different
head
environment, gun. Everything right. Else. Less but at stake.
It was.
I bet you were good at sparring, weren't you?
I was. Everyone knows that. I was there. I was the king. I was the king of sparring. You give me a head guard. That was my safety blanket. I would beat up anyone. Everyone knows. Everyone knows when I sparred Rinky Wright what happened to him. But yeah, sparring. He would have bashed the living daylights out of me for the fall.
So, Matt, with regards to Towers and Lucas Brown. Obviously, it's been mentioned now that Lucas Brown could be in line for a fight at David Price. Do you think David Price does a similar job to Brown as Brown did to Towers? Do you think it's just another step up that food chain?
I think it'd be. I don't think it'd be ideal for David Price to go back into boxing with someone like Lucas Brown. However, all things said and done, I think David Price is a level above Lucas Brown, but he's got that punch, hasn't he? And at the moment, I think it'd be a dangerous assignment for David Price to take with his confidence in question.
I mean, I'd like to see Lucas Brown, like, just as a fan-friendly kind of affair, Lucas Brown versus Derek Chisora, because I think their styles would gel so much. Trust me.
Okay, interesting stuff. What about Luke Campbell, who fought on the bill? Spencer, is Luke Campbell impressing you? Three fights in, three stoppages, got some rounds under his belt against a very, very tough, durable Lee Connolly.
Yeah, but Lee Connolly's record was he 2-5?
Right? Yeah, he
even
was. Yeah.
Even on the Appleby fight, a lot of people thought he was very unlucky to lose that fight. I would have to go with a notion to stick alongside with like what Jim Watt was saying like he's a level above. So giving him this kind of opponent isn't really going to propel him to the forefront. Bar him getting rounds, which you guys put in the earlier columns, like he was up there, like, right. But he is very good. That is a fact. He is very, very good. They could have found somebody else, but it doesn't matter. You just got to get wins. And you realize with boxing, like, the better you are as an amateur star is the more you protect. You don't really let, we don't want to take no chance. We don't let you off the leash. Where I really do believe, by watching, I've watched all of his three pro fights so far, I think that Luke Campbell is very good indeed, and he does remind me a little bit of Gary Stretch, how he puts them shots. He doesn't even remind you of Gary Stretch, the former British champion, fought Chris Eubank in 1991. He does. He's a very, very good fighter.
What about John Simpson, Tommy Coyle, that fight? Obviously, Tommy was the bigger man on the night, looked to be carrying the heavier dig. You're familiar with John Simpson, having matched Choi with him. So what did you make? Any surprises there with Coyle stopping Simpson? No, what did you make of the stoppage
Did you see the stoppage? Did you see that fight?
Yeah.
It was a bit of a premature stoppage, but Coyle was winning the fight.
He was winning the fight. He was too big, wasn't he?
Right, yeah. Coyle was winning the fight, but if you look on someone like John Simpson, he's a guy who is a warrior, who will get hit, will get hurt. But you know, if there's any ailment or any chance, any smidgen of a chance for him to fight back and carry on fighting, he will do that. Mm. You know what I mean? So sometimes, if you know through familiarity of history with a guy, through the experiences, what they've been through, sometimes you can just allow them and say, all right, then, well, you can get on and you can carry on fighting. So I do feel kind of sorry for him. And I like John Simpson. He's a very nice man. But with Tommy Coyle, him fighting the way that he is like a human buzzsaw. There is, earlier today at Sky, Ed Robinson was saying he reminds him of a Vinny Pazienza. He's got that kind of style. And he reminds me a lot of Matthew Hilton, the former IBF
light middleweight champion.
Yep. He does, don't he? The way that he fights, you know what I mean? How he's just in and out, and he's got that tenacity. And plus, he's got a good coach with him in Jamie Moore. So I wish him all the best, man.
Yeah, okay. Matt, under the radar, but a very big fight nonetheless, was Segura against Hernan Tyson Marquez. Big win for Segura. Breathes fresh life back into his career. Like I said, the fight went under the radar a bit, but it's a meaningful fight, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen it, to be honest with you, but I've heard. We've got something that went up online today, an interview with Brian Valoria. And he's raving about this fight, and you know, I thought we'd seen
it was a belter.
Wicked fight, man.
I thought Segura we'd perhaps seen the best of him, but you know, he's turned it around, and right down there, that weight class is one of the best in boxing at the moment. There's so many good fights to make down there.
Yeah, definitely, I couldn't agree more. But looking ahead to this weekend, we've got the return of the Filipino Flash, Nonito Donaire. Hasn't boxed since he lost to Guillermo Rigondo earlier in the year. Spencer, I know you're high on Rigondo, but Matt, what do you reckon about Donaire going back in with Darchinian? I think the hard thing for Donaire is that he's going to be tasked with improving on the performance he did against Darchinian last time, which at the time was sensational.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that fight. I think it was 2007, something like that. And Darchinian was very much the favourite going into that fight. And for quite a while afterwards, and it finished in the fifth round, it was a devastating finish. But after that, Darchinian did want a rematch with Donaire. It was almost considered a bit of a fluke, which obviously time told us that it wasn't. But to me, it's 5 years too late, this fight. I think Darchinian is sliding. I think it's a decent enough for Donaire to get some confidence back. I'm not convinced that he's going to go in there and look as good and scintillating as he did first time round, particularly with some of the reports we've heard about him, enjoying his red wine outside the ring and whatever, so close to the fight. But you know, I would imagine that Donaire will win pretty convincingly, perhaps, but he maybe forced to go the distance this time.
What do you reckon, Spencer?
You know what? This fight should have happened years ago.
Yeah.
Like from when they first thought they should have, okay, this had an instant rematch, didn't happen. But I do like Nonito Donaire. I think he's a very, very good fighter. Everyone knows that I'm mad set on Rigondo because I think Rigondo's skill set is just of another level. And the thing is, he's so fluid but relaxed with it. It's like there's nothing rushed. But with Nonito Donaire, he is so fan-friendly. Do you know what I mean? Just in and out of the ring, and he's a nice man. Nice guys are boxing, but he on Sky, Andy Scott did a little feature with him on ringside, and he's just a gentleman who actually gets it. Who gets like, I don't have to do crazy stuff. He's a happy family man and stuff. And I think when you find that peace, sometimes it can either make you vicious because you've got that peace inside as a fighter, or it can kind of make you civilized, like Mickey said in Rock. Yeah, civilized Rock. You can become civilized. You know what I mean? And that's. I hope it's the former that he's not like he's proper like on this because he's meant to smash Darchinian. He's meant to just go in there and just deal with him.
Walk through him, yeah.
Right. That's what he's meant to do.
For Darchinian, this is massive as well for him, isn't it? I think we're forgetting that.
Well,
really.
I think the thing is as well is like you say, there's been signs of regression for Darchinian for a while. Stocky punchers don't tend to mature late. They sort of burn brightly and burn out quickly. The thing with Darchinian, where you talk about bad blood, is these guys haven't had a nice word to say each other about one another since their fight. There's been a rivalry that's carried on. Darchinian saying it was a fluke, that he was the guy who basically created Nonito Donaire, and he's the guy who's now going to finish him. Which, I mean, Darchinian's always talked the talk, but there is a level of bad blood here, which obviously means a different level of intrigue to the fight, because when you know it's personal, you get that little bit more engaged with the fight, don't you?
Yeah, you do, but can your chin take it? Right, and he's proven in the past now that he's getting a little bit long in the tooth. I'm looking at the picture there that we've got in the boxing news as well. He's looking kind of old there, like graying and balding and stuff. And, you know, but he does look big for the weight. He's always looked big for the weight. Mm. And this fight's going to be at featherweight, right? It's not going to be at super bantam. It's actually going to be at featherweight. Yeah. Right, so they're dabbling. He's just dabbling with a featherweight fight. Maybe he's just I ain't got time to be chopping off the weight, because I remember on quite a few times when they were doing their profiles on HBO and the things that Nonito Donaire would have to do to get down to weight, like those last few pounds. Mm. So maybe this is a comfort zone thing, right? If they could get a bigger fight for him down at super bantam weight, then he'd be back there. But it'll be the same thing as before if he was to go and fight Rigondo, because I think Rigondo's just got his number. A very clever man. Just I've never seen somebody of fight so disinterested, but yet be interesting. That's what Rigondo does. He just fights like, yeah, I'm walking through them. Mm. But yet you're getting hit with 5, 6, 7 shots at a time. Great fighter. I would pick Nonito Donaire on a stoppage in this fight as well, man.
Okay, interesting. Matt, how would you go? How would you call
it? I'm going to go points. I'm going to go for points for Donaire.
For Donaire. Wide,
yeah,
wide points.
Yeah, lopsided.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. Some interesting things from elsewhere in the magazine. We've spoken to George Groves and Carl Froch this week. In the aftermath of their appearance on ringside, I've just seen it here.
George Froch is mentally fragile. You know what I mean, ooh, that's fighting talk, right?
And Groves was childish. I mean, some really interesting stuff from both of them. It's actually well worth a read. Spencer, who came off the set with the upper hand? Who came off the Sky set with the upper hand?
I don't think either of them did. You know why? And this is real. And I speak to Carl Froch kind of regular. And I know George Groves. I don't think either of them, you know why? Because I've never seen either of them behave that way. So that is a new side to Carl Froch. I've never seen Carl Froch so switched on, so serious. I'm saying, well, you're a little bit too serious. Sometimes even when you're talking like the wicked talk, the tough talk, but there's a little glint like of laughter. I've never seen George Groves be so aggressive in his mannerism. So I'm saying, I don't think none of them really came off that well, because they weren't the people that I'm used to seeing. But I would say, if we had to give it to someone, you'd have to give it to Carl Froch, because Carl Froch would. But no, on the reals, I don't think nobody really came off that well. But if I had to go for somebody, I'd have to go for Carl Froch, because Carl Froch said, you know what, don't worry, carry on talking, I've got something for you. You know what I mean?
Matt, do you think, you've spoken to Groves, I mean, Groves doesn't feel like Froch came off with the upper hand, does he?
No, George is convinced that he won that opening battle, really, the battle of words. And, you know, I mean, watching it was fascinating to watch. Froch was, he certainly didn't enjoy that hour, did he? Let's face it. But I think that the Groves does keep saying that, yeah, he was going to start crying out of fear, which to me is nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. Groves wanted to get under Froch's skin. I think to an extent he succeeded in doing that, but it wasn't in a way that Froch is now scared. It's just that Froch is just sick and tired of this guy that was just berating him on his shoulder. It's a bit like, it was like playground stuff, wasn't it, a little bit, really? And that's what it reminded me of. These kids at school are just basically setting out to get on your nerves. And that's what it was like. And if that's what George was trying to do, was to get on Froch's nerves, I think he succeeded.
Okay. Elsewhere, you were at the Frank Warren press conference where they unveiled Nathan Cleverley Mark II as a cruiserweight. And they announced that Derek Chisora will be fighting at the Copper Box on November 30th too. Derek Chisora defending his European title. But they also mentioned that he could be fighting Kubrat Pulev early next year, providing he comes through it. Matt, if you're a matchmaker, who's the dream fight for Chisora? And it can't be Vladimir Klitschko next. So,
I'd like to see him. I'd like to go back to what was tentatively made earlier on in the year, him against Wilder. I'd really like to see that fight. I was so excited about that. I remember getting to that press conference, Frank Warren press conference, and he was at Wembley, and the announcement was Deontay Wilder against Derek Chisora. And I remember thinking, what a fantastic fight that is for both of them. I think it's a fight that Chisora could win. It's also a fight he could get knocked out in the first round. It's a really, really interesting fight for both of them.
How would you see that going? Wilder and Chisora.
Do you know what? I haven't seen enough of Wilder. But Wilder is living up to his name because he's wild. He just goes like throws like this. Sometimes when he's fighting, he does remind me of Captain Caveman. Do you remember that? Remember Captain Caveman?
Yeah.
That's just wild. It's Captain Caveman. Right. He's and I'm shocked with somebody like Wilder because you have a guy, and we were speaking earlier, who's most probably one of the greatest American amateurs of all time in Mark Breland. You know, Olympic gold medalist. You know what I mean,
former. You think he'd be ironing out those kinks by now, wouldn't you? It's 30 fights in.
Fights now, and it's like now, but no disrespect to him. Like in the fight for fight, you could see like Deontay Wilder, who is learning a little bit more. And he's trying to be more authentic with jab and how he triggers off the jab and stuff. But he is wild. The Audley Harrison win, I thought he was totally just wild. It was like that wasn't like a street fight, but that was more like a nightclub fight. Have you noticed that? If you're in a nightclub, the fights that you have in a nightclub are totally different from a street fight. Street fight, you've got more room in that. In your nightclub, you're fighting. You know what I mean? It's totally different. You shorten your shots and stuff like that, and then that come over the right. But it was totally different. You know what I'm talking about.
The table's going flying everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. See, he's all coming out of him. Dangerous guy, man. Dangerous guy.
So, elsewhere in the magazine, I think we'll change subject on that. Really interesting feature here about the split between Golden Boy Promotions and Top Rank. Danny Flexon with Steve Kim, Jack Hirsch and Dan Goosen have answered a list of questions and given some really good insight and analysis about why the split's happened and what the repercussions are. Matt, I'll start with you. Is it a good thing that HBO and Showtime and as a consequence Golden Boy and Top Rank aren't doing business together? Is it good for boxing?
No, of course it's not. It's not. It's not good for boxing. I mean, we can. I suppose you can argue that if the more channels that are showing boxing, the more promoters that are promoting boxing.
An argument though this year, if you're going to be very short with her fight, you can argue that the level in competition on both networks and the fights that are being made have improved this year. Bills are 3-4 deep again.
Yeah, you can make that argument. You can make that argument, but it's almost a little bit this year, not wishing to downgrade what's gone on this year, but a few of the fights have turned into absolute corkers this year. You would perhaps say that's a bit more by luck than judgment. Some fights have come along that have been absolutely fantastic, and we were not expecting it. Timothy
Bradley
springs to mind as the first example. There was a few during that sort of period in the summer and in the early part of the year where some of these fights that people are not really looking forward to turn into absolute barn burners. Is that down to quality matchmaking, more money being put into the sport, or is it something else? I'm not sure, but I think the only answer surely can be is that if these guys are going to work together, then boxing will get the matchups that it wants, and the sport will be a lot healthier, in my opinion.
Spencer, political question: Is this split good or bad?
On sometimes it is good, but on other times it's not good. You know, you just got to look right now of like what Sky are doing. Sky is saying, right, we're just working with one promoter. Do you know what I mean? Which is Eddie Hearn at Matchroom. You got other guys who are desperately, like, you know, we go through a list, you know, Carl Greaves, you know what I mean? Steve Goodwin, Steve Wood, Mickey Heller. All these guys are good promoters, and they are the backbone of our sport, right? And they could have a fight, and they're trying to push him into something, and it's very, very difficult to make it happen. So it's all about relationships, right? And then you go on the other side, then you've got Box Nation. And if it was just like no split and just one guy, then it would never work because, you know what I mean, how many dates are going to be given? So we do need other channels and we do need other platforms to go and do to show the sport. This is just fact.
To grow the sport.
Yeah, it of course, because, right, if you got 20 fighters in your stable and you got 10 and I got 30 fighters in my stable, right? Notice that I've got no more fighters, right? But what I'm trying to say, if that was the case, all of them cannot fight each other all the time on one particular platform or one particular TV genre. So we have to spread them out. So we do need the backing of maybe terrestrial TV getting back into sport, which will never happen. I don't think it's going to happen for now. I can't see it happening because they're thinking, well, we could show fishing and we're going to get more viewers. You know what I mean?
It's not even that. I mean, still football's king, isn't it? By far and away. So any kind of football seems to be higher up the pecking order.
Yeah, I mean, so what we do need, we need someone like a Roman Abramovich or someone like that to say they're throwing their hat into professional boxing and shake it up, and then you can go grab the fans that they got from the fan base from their football. And so, like, the boxing could be like, because it is the last accessible sports star, because you could have world champions, which I know you guys do have, who walk in here and they want to walk down the high street and no one ain't going to be stopping them and hugging them or the rest of it. They ain't going to get that no more because we ain't got no terrestrial TV involved in it. But the platforms that are here right now, I am also, you know what I mean, I don't care who you are, Sky, Box Nation, I don't care, right? What I am saying is this, it's great that there are these platforms because it gives other promoters and everybody else, it gives them work. And that is the bottom line. If you ain't gonna work, then the game's dead. And if the game's dead, you see what you be sitting down there. I come in here, you guys are all busy and everything else, right? You know what I mean? We know how hard and busy you were because when I first come in, you had an afro. So right. So then when you ain't got no heart. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? So we need more platforms to be sharing this, and plus it improves the game slightly, I believe, because we're saying, well, we don't want to be outdone by what they show, what they put on. So yeah, then that's kind of good.
Yeah. No, I agree with all that. I think the initial question is this a good thing about this divide? And no, it isn't, because as long as we've got this divide, boxing will always be that sport. And I can't think of another one off the top of my head where the best won't automatically fight the best. They won't compete against the best. And in order, I think, for boxing to flourish in the future and for it to attract new fans
and be the best it can be. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. You've always got to have that conclusion. So the best like will fight the best.
So they could formulate under one umbrella?
Not necessarily under one umbrella. Right.
They just work together.
Yeah.
Well, you know that's not going to happen though, is it?
It has happened.
I know it has happened, but in today's society, that isn't going to happen. If you've got your number one fighter and you've got your number one fighter, you ain't going to say, oh, then we'll let them fight each other because I'm on this TV network and you're on that TV network and they're earning this much here and they're earning that much and they could come together now. We could earn maybe double that. But we're saying, well, if my guy gets beat, then I've kind of lost my commodity and this is how it is. I wish that we could go back to the old days. I wish we could go back to the old days when we were on 8 weights. I wish we could go back to those days. I wish we could go back to the time where we had great fighters who would fight each other, or great fighters who never had the opportunity and they had to make their own club. Like, you know what I mean? Like the Black Murderers role and stuff like that, where you had like Lloyd Marshall, who had to fight Ezzed Charles 6-7 times but didn't want to, or Holman Williams. You go right through the whole list of these great fighters who never had the opportunity. Yeah, cool, great. But this is not the 50s, this is not the 40s now. The world's changed.
Okay. Yeah. But I was just going to say, just because we think it's not going to happen doesn't mean that we can't say that it should.
No, I totally agree with you. You know what I mean? On the reels, I have to be realistic. I would love for it to happen. I'd love for it to be like the old days of the 80s where you had BBC or you had ITV, but you had guys who would fight. And then if they had to go do anything, they'd meet in the middle for a common denominator. Do you remember, it was in 1986 when Frank Bruno fought Tim Witherspoon for the WBA World Heavyweight title?
Yeah.
And ITV showed it at a certain time, BBC showed it at a certain time. That was beautiful. Do you know what I mean? That was beautiful.
Okay, I've got two questions left, and what I will say is that from the really interesting stuff from Dan Goosen, who's in a fairly unique position as one of the independent guys left, who's commented on this split. There's more from him on our website, www.boxingnewsonline.net. He's answered a couple of the questions here very, very well, and I'd like to put the same questions to you guys, if that's okay. Spencer, you first for this one, please. How do you see the balance of power between these two major TV channels, as in HBO and Showtime, and the two major promoters changing, if at all, over the next 5 years?
You know what? That is a very, very difficult question. I don't really see it changing, because nobody's not going to give up your power basically. You know what I mean? And I think, you know what, I tell you when it's really going to open up, when it really opens up, is when Floyd Mayweather retires from boxing. Because it seems weird right now. It's like, you know what I mean, for so long, for that global entity, I think now Floyd Mayweather has become that global entity. The switch from him being a HBO fighter then to be a Showtime fighter, and you know, you look on Floyd Mayweather, what he's got here is a corporation.
Because generally the best fighters want to follow the figurehead, don't they? That's exactly, been shown, hasn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's kind of cool, because you've seen his camp ain't looking for easy fights. His camp, you know what I mean? You just got to look at last time. I know for a fact, Ashley Fearpain was offered the same money. He got paid fantastically well as well. Ashley Fearpain got the same money was offered to him to fight a lesser opponent than the opponent that he did fight. You know what I mean? And he could have said, no, I want to go take the easy route. But no, because you're in around the best, you want to say, well, I want to go prove myself. So I think when Floyd Mayweather retires properly and then says, right, well, then I'm going to really throw my promoter's hat in the ring, then I think we're going to see major changes. You know what I mean? Especially like, you know what I mean? Al Haymon being Mr. You know what I mean? He's like Paul Daniels. You can't catch that guy. You know what I mean? Right. But with that, I think that is where you're going to see like the major, you're going to see like major powerful plays being going out.
Matt, see any changes, and how could they come about, or do you think it will stay the same?
I mean, at the moment, it's difficult to see changes, but everything does change, doesn't it? As we go along through boxing, things do change. You've got to remember Bob Arum's age, what's going to happen there. As Spencer talks about, you know, in 5 years' time or whatever, Floyd Mayweather is unlikely to still be the top pound-for-pound fighter, and people have probably stopped talking about a Manny Pacquiao fight by then as well. Yeah. So we're going to have some different guys at the top. So you're just going to have to see what happens. I think with boxing, what we do know is that it's unpredictable, and I think that will continue.
Okay, I'll answer this next question first so that you guys can get some time to think about it. If you could pit any top-ranked fighter against any Golden Boy Promotions fighter, which two would you choose and why? And I think there's many, obviously, many different permutations here that you could make, particularly between the light welters and the welterweights, where they've both got around about 10 each of top fighters involving Khan, Matisse, Garcia, Bradley, Marquez, Pacquiao, Mayweather, Provodnikov, Alvarado, Rios. There's a number of massive fights there. In terms of the style of fight that I quite like to enjoy, or I do enjoy, I would like to match Lucas Matisse with Ruslan Provodnikov.
Cool. That's going to be hard to top, isn't it?
I want to go first. You know what I mean?
I think that's what I'd like to see.
I could imagine you at school, you were one of their ones. Could anybody ask a question?
I've been sat on that for 2 weeks.
I know. Okay, Tristan, go and answer the question. No. You know what? No, nobody. I couldn't. I've said this on Toe to Toe quite a few times. I would love to see that fight. That's so fan friendly. That is a fight that you would. That was just,
yeah, but I've
fight.
Already got that. So you
right,
got
you got that. So then I'm saying Mayweather Golovkin, for the simple fact that I think like Mayweather still doesn't get his dues, and Mayweather would tax that ass.
And although Golovkin's not a top round fighter, you can go with that, because that's still part of the HBO show.
Still HBO show.
Yep. Matt, which one would you go for?
I mean, I know I've just said that people stop talking about it, it won't help that I'm going to mention it again. But there's still something about Mayweather and Pacquiao I would love to see. Say if Pacquiao comes out, say he stops, he looks absolutely fantastic, stops Brandon Rios inside 5 rounds, something like that, and we get that kind of statement fight, that kind of statement performance from Manny Pacquiao, the drums will slowly start beating for that Floyd Mayweather showdown. And again, and let's face it, it would be such a massive, massive event that would perhaps put boxing back into the limelight where it belongs.
I don't think so. I'm going to just have to disagree with you. I don't think so. Reason being, because Manny Pacquiao's been beat. We're looking at the performances that Manny Pacquiao's had against Marquez. We look at easily Floyd Mayweather beat Marquez. We're going for it, even though Floyd Mayweather did have just the most I've seen him get hit in the last how many years when he fought Cotto. But he's addressed that now, and he's a different entity. Now his dad's in the corner as well with him. He's a different entity because he's gone back to boxing. It's like, you know, I can just be like a mosquito here and just, you know what I mean, just bite you and go about my business and come back and draw some more blood. There, to me personally, Manny Pacquiao would need to do like, not just one win. If he goes out and takes care of Brandon Rios, so what? Right? I think he'd need to do about 3 fights like that to make people say, right, Manny Pacquiao's back. I don't know what he's on, but whatever he's on it. And then we'd be more interested in to see that fight happen.
Yeah.
But right now, I've always been a big believer that Manny Pacquiao is hype. When he knocked out Ricky Hatton, that was Manny. That was like, rah, what's going on here? That was vicious, right?
And he knocked out Cotto a few months later.
Yeah,
as well. That was the top, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that year, 2010. If that Floyd Mayweather fought that Manny Pacquiao, then yeah, I'd be greatly interested. Right now, I think some of Manny Pacquiao's markability has dulled. I think like Manny Pacquiao right now is seemingly a little bit disinterested in boxing, and we're not seeing that much. We're on YouTube. I'm on YouTube regular trying to get. I know you guys because that's your job, right? So I'm there checking. I'm not really seeing. I don't know. But if he comes out really impressive in this fight, and then maybe one more fight, then people would have to bang that drum and say, "All right, then Floyd Mayweather."
Yeah, I think so. I agree. I agree with you. I agree with you to an extent. But basically, we've just been told by these guys in boxing that Floyd Mayweather against Saul Alvarez was one of the highest grossing fights of all time. And if promotional companies can make that the biggest fight of all time, imagine what they could do with Pacquiao and Mayweather.
I totally agree, because on many times, which I said with Matt Hamilton, I said it on Toe to Toe, Ringside Toe to Toe, and I said it to any sex expert, that I said that fight with Floyd Mayweather versus Alvarez would be a glorified sparring session.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. And I'm not saying we were conned. We wasn't conned, because it's like,
it's a legitimate fight.
It was a legitimate fight. And people do buy into the fact that we want to see Floyd Mayweather beat.
Mm.
But I'm not buying into it, because I know he's going to retire unbeaten. He's not losing.
Is he going to retire 50-0 or 49-0? Because his contract's up at 49-0.
I think the 49-0, and then I think maybe he'll get to 49-0. And it's not a gimme fight. No fight is a gimme fight. But I remember reading, I think it was it Graham Houston? Who used to write for you guys, right?
Back used to be the editor.
Used to be the editor. And Graham, it was November 88, Sugar Ray Leonard versus Donald Lund. And at that time there, Sugar Ray Leonard was 33 years old. And he said that the rate how Leonard put everything together in that fight, he could go on for another 2-3 years. Unfortunately, after that, he was done in his next fight when he fought Tommy Hearns in 89. In June of 89, he was kind of done. He got knocked down twice. And then we had a reservation. But with Floyd Mayweather, not saying he's greater than Leonard, but for longevity, how he strung this out, the guy's badass, man. And seriously, because you think, right, you've got to be done now. Look how old you are. You know what I mean? You're wear and tear, you've got to be done. But it's like, he dispels things because of, not like, he's not even fighting any that more sneaky. He's been he's cut down his punch ratio, but he's just pinpoint accuracy and speed and he's just bad. And like, when you look on that, you're saying, right, Floyd Mayweather's gonna be here for a long time, no one ain't beating him, and he will say, all right then, let me just break this Rocky Marciano 50-0. Let me just break that. You never know. I can't see a man like him who is egocentric, right? Saying, all right then, well, I'm going to retire 49-0. He could say, nah. And he ain't going to tell no one that now, because you know what? He's the type of person.
He's going to save that for.
Yeah, he's going to say, like, ah, well, you know, I don't want to beat no one. Da, da, da. You know, it is what it is, whatever. You know, like, trust me, how Floyd Mayweather answers questions when being asked them, he could run for presidency that now. He's like, he changes his attitude a little piece, like, ah, I don't know, to the demographics, I don't know, right. Do you know what I mean? The only thing.
What? Have you finished?
If you run out of
steam. So, I thought you was going to take over. No. You see, this is what happens when you start working with amateur people, right? But I'm going back to the Death Star that is Sky Sports, right? Where we have auto cues and everything else. We don't have no bright light flashing in my eye. But on the reals, boxing news has been, anybody who's inside been interested in boxing, you reach, walk out on the main front desk there. Boxing news was part of everyone who's been involved in the sport of their life. My dear friend Ben Dowie, we meet him, have talks, like Fridays weren't a Friday at lunchtime where you went to go to the toilet. You didn't have a boxing news with you. Do you understand? And then when you changed to come out on the Thursday, Trish Dixon and you, Matt, have changed my dietary system because it's not the same. Do you understand? I put on weight now and everything else and stuff. Yeah, you know I mean, and it's not on paper anymore. It's on this glossy stuff. Yeah, you know I mean, you can't even use it as Andrex. It's just terrible, man. It's terrible.
Right. In closing, James DeGale, we've got a big feature with him this week. Next week, he's fighting the son of Howard Davis Jr., Dyer Davis. James DeGale, we've asked several experts in the magazine this week. Will he win a world title? Spencer, will James DeGale
I'm telling you now, seriously. I've seen James DeGale do things. And he sparred a lot. He's done a lot of rounds with Larry Kandayo, who I think is a fantastically talented human being and one of my fighters. But even though there's a big weight difference between them, he's very, very talented, James DeGale. And not only that, but James DeGale has now found a maturity. And what I've noticed with James DeGale now is like he's personable. His personable persona is now coming across in his public persona, because you guys are interviewing, you guys know him, and a lot of people look on James DeGale and say, he's a bit of a dick. He don't behave right, blah, 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 and all the rest of it. Until you meet him, he's very warm and he's a very family orientated man. But he is very, very skillful, and there's things that James does that I've seen him in the gym with Jimmy McDonald that, you know, I could see him win a version of a world title. No ifs or buts. You know, he's been advised by Ambrose Mendy. You know what I mean? It'd be nice to see Ambrose back in the picture. You know, he used to be one of my mentors when I was a kid until, you know what I mean? So that'd be good. But he's very talented. Give him his dues. He's very, very talented fighter. And he's coming out.
Matt, do you think A, you can win a world title, B, he's ready for someone like Sakio Beaker?
Oh God, Sakio Beaker, horrible fighter to fight. But yeah, I'd pick DeGale over Sakio Beaker. I think I remember I saw quite a few of James's early professional fights from ringside, and I was convinced that he was a star in the making. Absolutely convinced. And then he won the British title against Paul Smith, and
that was superb.
Dominated Paul Smith from start to finish, and that was an absolutely brilliant performance. I've seen nothing, although he faltered against Groves. I think I scored that for DeGale. It was people were split with that. I haven't seen anything that's changed my opinion that James DeGale is not going to rule the world one day.
Okay.
Wait. Before you cut off, what do you think, my friend, about James DeGale? Could you be answering all the questions, Tristan?
DeGale, yeah, I think he can win a world title. I think he's going to be hard pushed to leap straight into the company of the guys that were in the Super Six, or the most of the Super Six guys. So you're looking at Ward, Froch, Kessler, Durrell, wherever he is. But I'd probably fancy him against Arthur Abraham, who's looking like he's slowed down dramatically. Quite possibly against Stieglitz, and possibly against Beaker. In fact, I think he'd probably have a better chance with Stieglitz than I think he would against Beaker, who's just a nightmare.
Do you think so? I think he'd beat all. I think he will take care of Stieglitz, Abrahams. I think Abrahams has totally slowed up.
Yeah,
you know I mean,
he has
totally slowed up. He would deal with Stieglitz because of his style, I believe so. And I definitely think that he would deal with Beaker. Yeah, but Beaker is a very strong character, and like some, you know, I mean, you know, you got to be a tough guy. If you left the African country to go live in Australia and go to America, you're tough, man. That's it. That's tough. Oh, I'm not leaving my safety blankets. But yeah, I think James DeGale, world champion in the making, man.
Okay, interesting stuff. Well, thank you very much, guys, for your time this week. Much appreciated. We'll be back, as always, next week, where we will be recapping on that big show in Texas with Nonito Donaire, and looking ahead to the week that's coming up, including an interesting-looking heavyweight prize fighter. So we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.